All right, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part.
So,
this awesome little video on TikTok speaking about identities and what we know about ourselves. This video of this girl who said, you can request your own file from the FBI.
I want to do it.
I was going to ask, have you? I only watched it. A lot of people had commented that if you request it and they are not like actually investigating you, that they'll just respond and tell you, sorry, we have nothing. And then I wondered, is that just a lie?
I'm sure, but what information is on there? Like every address I've had or every car I've owned, like what kind of information?
I have so many questions.
I just want to see it.
I want somebody who's in the FBI. See, now I'm going to have to tap our FBI friends that I met in Las Vegas at CrimeCon. I need answers. Yeah. I need to know. I need to know, do they have a file on everyone or only... do they only open a file if you've done something wrong? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. If you...
like, do they automatically start one when you're born? Like, okay, fresh file.
True. Do they
for everyone. And we'll just fill it. We'll fill it up when they do something. Or is it we only start a file when you start doing some shady shit?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
At first, I assumed... that it was just like just things that would make you, like if you've ever owned a house or sold property or whatever, I thought it would just be a bunch of that stuff. But then I was like, why are some people's like hundreds of pages?
I mean, that kind of feels like that would just be my credit report. And I can, well, right? I could just ask, you know,
Equifax.
Credit karma for that. So... I feel like if it's going to be the FBI report, it's got to be more. They have to know everything from the get-go, what school I went to, who my parents are. They have to know the in-depth things.
Fascinating.
You know? But in that case, would have had to start the file at the beginning. So is somebody That's just true. Getting, like, are we getting pinged the minute we're born? Somebody just sends a little bloop. To the FBI, like, hey, open up a new file. We got one.
Yeah. I don't know. And I would like to know if it's connected to anything else. Because I've had, like, family members who work for the government. Like, does that mean I'm automatically? Because they always want to know your family history before you can work for whatever.
I mean, so I would imagine, and maybe I'm getting way too sophisticated about this because maybe there's just not enough money for this and somebody's like cracking up right now. But wouldn't it just be easier if there's already set in place like some computer algorithm? Because if they do census, right, wouldn't it just be easier if all these babies are being born, the computer's just logging it. And then as we're getting updated throughout our lives, all of these government systems, our school systems, our colleges, our credit, all of this is being updated. And then we update it ourselves every time we do a 10-year challenge on Facebook, we update it. When we buy a car, we update it. Every time we Snapchat, we update it. So then it just automatically ping, ping, ping. And then like, the juicy stuff born, like arrests.
You get your social security number. The day you're born or whatever. Like, you know, when you get your outpatient paperwork, when you go to the hospital.
Your
like
footprint.
Part of that can be like, here's your footprint and your SOCH and your chip.
Well, and nowadays, they'll also just take your blood up front, even if you don't know about it. They're just going to prick your foot and take your blood.
I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I don't mind because I'm always curious.
I'm of two minds about it because on the one hand, I'm with Paul Holes. Like, we should just take everybody's blood because if we are all on an even table, then nobody can hide.
Yeah.
However,
that's true.
When I was talking about that the other day, Ron was like, oh, really? And then he sent me an email, which I'll forward to you, about how they are now slamming a bunch of labs and clinicians here in New Jersey who were taking newborns' blood without parental consent. And as a nurse, I'm very much against doing anything without consent, number one, because I think consent is so important. But also, then if you're taking that information and pumping it out there into what databases? Are those databases secure? Because we know that so much of the internet is not secure.
Of course.
And so many companies out there that are private companies that are taking that information and then selling it to third parties. So I feel of two minds about it because I want criminals to be caught, like Golden State Killer with DNA. And I absolutely am on board with all of us just swabbing cheeks and being like that.
Well, how do you feel about the, so I did the 23andMe where you spit in the tube.
Yeah.
And I do feel comfortable. Like I don't have, I'm not a big person who feels like they need to be private about that. Like if you want my DNA, you can have my DNA. I would love to be a part of solving a crime. Like that would be my dream. And I know the like barcode and names don't follow through to the website where I get on the receiving end. I sort of understand that. And Paul Holes also did say, like, where are we going to store this? Like, why are people afraid to do it if we have nowhere to store all of these samples?
Yes. So, yes. And I hear what he's saying, but then let me just see if I can pull up this article because it was the kind of thing that I was always on that side. Okay, so it was a public records lawsuit that was filed that suggested that agencies were sampling this DNA without, so like I also have given my DNA, I did Ancestry. Mm-hmm. However, that's you and I making an informed decision to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a big difference between informed consent in the medical community and non-informed consent. And when that line is crossed between just telling parents, look, these are the options and this is what we really think is best. And I think a lot of people would reasonably say, like, I think if somebody had told me at my baby's birth, like, look, we can take their DNA right now. Do you mind? Just like I vaccinated my kids. I think reasonably I would have said, sure, you can take their DNA. Mm-hmm. I'm on board with that. Just like I gave my DNA, I don't see any reason to keep that. However, I think that is a personal choice and that we do have the right to make those decisions for ourselves and for our children. And that when I read articles like this, that, well, they're just taking it without letting people make that choice for themselves, that we start getting into some real crazy black areas that make me really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So like, while I do see the benefit, like it's very easy for medical professionals or for law enforcement to say like, well, we're just going to take it without your consent because the benefit is so great. Like that makes me immediately uncomfortable because there is so much corruption and there are so many bad things that can be done with good technology. So while there are some really amazing benefits, catching criminals is not a benefit that you're going to tell me you are going to force me to give my DNA for. Like that good does not outweigh the bad of you possibly taking my DNA or my child's DNA and exploiting that information for bad things. So it's still my baby or my own DNA that if I am not consenting to it, and now I'm reading things about how all these agencies are getting sued for taking it without my consent. I am very, very uncomfortable with now you coming out and saying, well, if we just all consented to it, like if you're doing it without my consent, Like that, it just, it puts a bad shadow over the people who want to use it consensually. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it makes me want to lean, it makes me want to lean harder into the area of let's just let adults consent to it. Unfortunately, because of what I'm seeing them do. And I don't like to, I feel like, you know what? This is why we can't have nice things kind of attitude.
Yeah. It's going to get, someone's going to ruin the fun for everyone.
Yes. Yes.
What about like, if they just made the process more, I don't know what the word is, official? Like when you submit your DNA and they're like, okay, do you want us to keep it or not keep it?
So but that's why I'm saying, I think that more and more where I see the research going and where I see the data acquiry, the DNA acquiry, where I see, I think that more and more I am becoming more uncomfortable with making those decisions, even for my own children. And that I feel like it's so much of a personal choice now that we will maybe get to the point where laws will have to be passed saying, you can't just release your DNA unless it is your own DNA. And if you want to release it, that's fine. And you have to read the fine print. And then if you choose to release it into something like, you know, the Gen Data Bank, because you feel that it is that crucial and beneficial to medical research or to criminal justice, then that's great. But you will make that decision for yourself and only your DNA and only when you're an adult. And I am thinking that because of everything I'm reading, that it will get to a point where not even parents are going to be able to say, sure, take my baby's DNA, because it's not looking good.
Two that are going to make me change my mind 5 different times. But as of right now, I'm just like, what's the big deal?
I used to feel that way too. And then as the kids got older and I had the kids and I started to feel like, okay, well, maybe it would be okay, but if I consented. And now as I have my kid ready to embark on the college journey, and the oldest one is going to be turning 21. And, you know, she was too young really for that to even have been taken. But I'm thinking, you know, she's turning 21 and I'm thinking, you know, what if she ever turned around and said, well, why did you do that with my DNA? Because once it's out there, it's out there.
True.
And then what do you do if they're out there now having kids turning around saying, well, why did you make that decision for me?
Well, I think some of those conversations are already happening because with people who are anti-vax, like when I was a kid, and I'm sure it was the same way for you, like when my mom brought me to the doctor was just like, you need to do this and this and this. And my mom was just like, okay. And I just got whatever vaccinations they wanted. I even, like, at school, they would vaccinate us, like, with the school nurse.
It was a different time.
So that, but I mean, what if I grew up and started having children and I was like, why did you vaccinate me? I don't want my kids to be autistic, or whatever my argument would be.
Yes. Yes. My mom absolutely
made that decision for me.
Yes. However, yes, you definitely will see versions of that conversation being happening. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But
so I don't know.
I still feel like that's a microcosm. So like if my mom chose to vaccinate me or not vaccinate me, that still could or could not affect me. It's like an if. It might or might not, right? But once they take my DNA and they put it in the system, there is no if. It's in the system. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, it might be in the system, it might not be in the, like, it is in the system. Like, there's no taking it back from the system, first of all. And then if that system got hijacked, or if that DNA then was linked to somebody else, like there's no like maybes. It's like, no, that's your DNA and it's out there. So it's like, I just feel like that's, It's like me. It's like if I unmasked you. It's like if I revealed your identity or outed you. It's like if I revealed who you were or took you out of the closet without asking your permission, mm-hmm. which is still, I mean, you could make a lot of cases that like, well, it doesn't matter. And you can still put a lot of privacy into Ancestry and 23andMe, and you don't have to put it in the public data bank. Like, those are all still gates that you can close. Mm-hmm. But I'm just feeling more and more uncomfortable with it just because of the things I'm hearing in the medical community about it and how I'm seeing law enforcement treading on those toes. Unfortunately, I was very much for it. I mean, even when I was going to CrimeCon, I was like, yeah, let's take all the blood when they're born. Do it. And now I'm like, not feeling comfortable about it.
Our opinions will probably change the more, because it's such a new thing with this whole DNA and ancestry and submitting your information, that I think we need more time.
I mean, the technology could change. There could be better safeguards. There could be a way to, I don't know, somebody could invent a machine that lets me run my DNA at home on my computer into my cell phone. You know, there could be a real Elizabeth Holmes who doesn't scam our money, that invents a machine. That lets me run my blood into my cell phone, right? So you never know. One drop of blood. Just one.
Yeah, that's all you need.
That's all I need. I can't believe that bitch is never going to see so much jail. Oh, I can't.
I know.
Well,
I thought she was fake. That whole name. I thought that was her fake name.
Oh, is it a fake name?
I don't know. Is that her name? Her whole persona, I feel like she created.
I mean, she's fake. Like, that's not her real voice that deep voice that she speaks with. That's not her real voice. Like, she cultivated that look. The whole thing that she only wears the black turtlenecks. Like, she only wears her hair in that ponytail to look. It's a look and a sound that she cultivated to have that character. Mm-hmm. So that it's not real, but I think that is her name, as far as I know. But I mean, piece of garbage.
And the way she acted with the other people, I was like, "You're not real. Like, who are you? Who are you? And what are you doing, you weirdo?"
Something about how she is in person apparently is very persuasive and very charming, especially to men. But she bamboozled plenty of people of all kinds, and you know.
Yeah.
Those kinds of people, they make for great documentaries. We see it over and over.
So for the podcast today, I have, I didn't prepare a game, but I did find something very interesting about another podcast I think we should do, like another episode we should do in the future. Okay. Because I fell down the rabbit hole on this. And I think a lot of people know, especially if you listen to a lot of podcasts or in the true crime community, everyone knows about Fred and Rosemary West, right?
Oh, yeah.
In England. So I, of course, had heard about them, but I was reading about, have you ever heard of the Moore murders?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
So I didn't really realize that much about them. For some reason, I thought there were like two different time periods. So what I have learned is that, I think her name is Mindy. When she was in prison, she was also in prison with Rosemary, and they would compete for who would be like the queen of the prison. And they started out as really good friends in prison, and they ended up hating each other. To the point that they would, I don't know if they would get into fights, but they, like, both wanted to be number one head bitch in charge in the prison. I had no idea that they were together in prison.
I did not know that. They both wanted to be Rizzo. They wanted to be leading the Pink Ladies.
They did. And I thought that was so fascinating. And I think that would make for...
Well, the Moore murders was also a couple, right? Mindy was with a gentleman, too. Yeah, same right. situation. They mm-hmm. also would take young girls into the fields. Mm-hmm. That was their jam, right? Yes. That was their MO.
So I don't know if they thought about, like, who did better crimes or what they thought about. But I just thought that was so interesting. I'm like, how could these two very similar things be happening near each other, near in Groton, England, I think it was. And they end up in the same prison together.
Yeah.
My mind was blown.
I wonder if there was just something going on at the time that was like spurring this idea of like teaming up.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't see so much of that now in general. We definitely mm-hmm. saw a lot more of that back then. That, you know, yeah. with Ken and Barbie, and definitely with Fred and Rose, mm-hmm. and with a lot of other examples. But that is interesting that both of them being in England. I mean, I knew that they were in generally the same time, but I never thought about them being like in the same area.
Yeah. And ending up like in the same prison together, living out their lives.
Wow. I mean, I could see how
so weird, but...
one would want to knock the other one out of the way. It's, you know what I mean? Like too yeah. similar.
I could see that too. But I right? just feel like they started out as friends. That is so bizarre. Like two serial killers.
I feel like that's happened here in the U.S. with some other serial killers, but with men. And I'm trying to think of the exact matchup.
I couldn't think of another example.
There were two men that ended up in jail at the same time who were like buddies. When I think of the name, I'll probably think of it by the next episode, that they knew each other in prison and like would speak to each other in jail. But they were like, they weren't exactly like similar in the MO, not like mm-hmm. that. That's fascinating yeah. though, because that's almost identical with those two bizarre. Kinds of.
Like a husband and wife and a husband and wife. Yeah. Except for Mindy, after she got caught, she was like, oh, he drugged me and made me do it, or I was drunk yeah. and did it. And it's like, I have been drunk. I've been like blackout. I still know if I'm getting into a van with like... You know what
yeah,
I mean?
I don't believe
like,
that shit.
I don't believe that shit no. at all.
Nope.
So
nope.
she's full of it.
Yeah, that's full how I felt it. With Carla Homolka. Like, no, I don't care what you say mm-hmm. about being coerced. I don't care what you say about like, oh, I was scared of him or whatever. No, no. Shut the hell up. Yeah. Liars.
I know you're full of shit.
Where is Rose West right now? You know what? I forget the ending to that. She's still in jail?
I don't know if she's dead or not. Dead or alive.
Let's hope.
I hope so. I know Ian Brady and... I don't remember her that.
I mean, because Carla Homolka went on to, like, live a normal life for whatever that's worth.
Weird. I think that whole thing is weird, but... Anyways,
well, I know that
with
Homolka, it was because she managed to fool them, and it wasn't until after she had made the plea deal that they found the videotapes mm-hmm. showing how much she had been a part of it, and it was too late at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they got screwed over on that one. She just fooled them.
That would be a good one to do. And another funny one. I was talking to my friend about this a couple of days ago, and she was like, do you remember Lorena Bobbitt? And I was like,
yes.
Yeah, I do. Because the guy is still around.
Oh, yeah.
And he did pornos. And yes. I totally
he went on to do porn.
About it. Mm-hmm. And one of them was called Frankenweiner.
Oh,
like, you made that up. And she's like, no, that was more than one. He did Frankenweenie. And I was like, do I need to see the first one? Like, I don't know what's going on. I see the second one.
I never watched any of them, but I did hear that he went on to do porn. I heard that he went on to get a really big one.
He bragged about like how amazing it is. Mm-hmm. Which who knows? But I think that would be another hilarious episode because he's still doing some of the same stuff, like marrying younger women who I don't know if they're like on the 90-day visa, like 90-day fiance type thing where they just want a green card to come to America. He still does that kind of stuff. So I think that'd be a good thing to
do. Okay. Yeah. This sounds like a real Prince Charming.
No wonder he got it chopped off.
I mean, we don't condone violence, but.
Oh, but I mean, I do see how it happened. You know,
if you're gonna don't go looking for problems,
and they won't find you.
I can't. It's like Betty Broderick. It's like I look. What she did was messed up. But like, also, dude, like what you did was so messed up. Yeah. So messed up, like that entire, like you really, she got wrung out. Like I could see why she snapped. I'm not saying it's okay that she snapped. I can see how it happened.
Yes. That's the thing where sometimes I hear like some of these stories and I'm like, okay, I would never do that. I don't really understand it, but I get it. You know,
yeah, no. When I watched that whole Betty Broderick thing, I was like, you know, I get it. I mean, sure. Yeah, no, I get it. Sure. yeah, no, that one I get.
that's too funny. All right, so for today's episode. I got this going. I didn't want to light it for the longest time.
Aww.
Because it was so cute. But I was like, I'm going to do it today. I'm going to set up my little pot area.
And you used the good matches that we posted up on Insta, right? Beautiful, beautiful matches. Whoever gave you those, excellent taste.
I know. I was like, I can't save these forever. I have to use them. So I'm going to start using them.
That's the thing about a cute gift is like you can save it, but at some point you're like, I gotta use it.
I know. That's how I felt about the candle. I was like, it looks so cute, but it just kind of looks like I got a wet claw hanging out.
Like you've just been keeping a wet claw can sitting in your house for a while and you're not cleaning it up.
Yeah. Don't at me. I'm not saying that it hasn't happened before. But
now you can just say they're candles.
It's a candle, bitch. Leave me alone.
It's a candle.
All right. So for today's story, I did tell you a while ago who I was doing it on because I wanted to see if you had ever heard of this guy before because I had never heard of him.
He was definitely not.
Yeah, he was going to be one of the people for Smash Her Pass.
Is that what you picked him out for?
But then I was like, this would be a good episode. And I don't know why they call him the Ted Bundy of India. This is the episode on Thug Bairam from the 18th century. So supposedly, he was born in 1765. In Pradesh, which is obviously in India. And if I mispronounce some of these Indian words, just know I'm a white lady from North Carolina. I'm sorry. Thug Bairam, he was born in 1765. And even growing up, he was a really quiet, shy kid. I was not able to find very much about his family I know he did have like a mom and a dad and that type of family, but nothing about the dynamic to see like where he came from or what he was all about. But what I was able to find that when he was a really shy child, he never liked to get mixed up with others or get in trouble. It wasn't until he was about 10 years old, he met someone who was 25 years older than him, and his name was Saeed. Saeed was a thug or thuggy who kind of ran around terrorizing people. So the word thuggy, it's actually a like an old British word taken from an Indian word called thag. And then the British version is thug or thuggy. So these thuggies would kind of run together in a cult, I would call it, or a group of people and rob or terrorize neighborhoods. But Bahram took it to an obvious extreme.
So it's not like a cute name. No. Not like a cuddly name. I'm thinking thuggy. No. Okay.
So he would get members to convert into the group. And that's where you would get the term thuggy. And Bahram, he used his cummerbund or rumal. So it was like a handkerchief or a sash that he would wrap around his waist. And in the sash was a large medallion that was sewn right into it. And it was like a gold, it wasn't a coin. They have like paintings of it online, which I could definitely post, but it was literally like a giant circle medallion that he kept in this sash. And that's how he would execute people along the way. So he would whip out his like cummerbund or his, for all intents and purposes, belt, and knock people out with this sewn in gold coin. And then he would press the coin on their Adam's apple and strangle them to death, and then just wrap it back around his waist and continue on his way, which is kind of like, I don't know how he did that. He must have got like done a lot of practice. They said that he could like whip it out. I don't know.
Whip it out? Very James Bond.
But they said through sheer skill, he could cast it like throw it, hit someone's neck, and it would get the victim like on the ground. And then he would just add the pressure on the throat while he strangled them. So that's how he did it. I don't know if that's necessarily true or a lore, but that's crazy. That's what he did. So Bahram and his followers or cult or devotees, they were devotees of the goddess Kali. And the ritualistic killings that they did were also in her honor. And so I looked up Kali because I don't know anything about Hindu or
Kali goddesses. Is badass. Badass bitch. Listen, let me just, I don't know what else this man did, but props for going up for a goddess and not just one of like the Hindu gods. I mean, he could have picked anybody, but that bitch is ready to slay. She, first of all, rips men's heads off. Yes. The goddess of death. I mean, she's all about death and destruction, but also rebirth. I mean, she kills so that new things can come in, but I mean, a battle goddess. Wears a necklace of skulls. Yeah, Kalima.
So I did look her up a little bit, and once I saw her, I was like, oh my god, I know who that is now. I just didn't know that's what her name was. But you're exactly right. She's the Hindu goddess of death, time, and doomsday. She is often associated with sexuality, violence, and is considered a strong mother figure and symbol of motherly love, which is such a weird, she'll kill you, but she also loves you.
Yes. Oh, because if you think about it, you would need to really have a strong sense of compassion in order to bring an end to something. And so that's a very strong theme for them in their religion, is this idea of bring death to that which is dying. So to sort of this idea of putting something out of its misery. And that's what Kali is about, is that if something is meant to be finishing, then finish it. The sort of like Mortal Kombat. Yeah, like kill it. But also that's why she's the mother and the end of time, and but also the beginning. It's a circle, right? So let it die so that it may be reborn.
I like that description.
Yeah.
Kali, so I looked up, I was looking at the website that kind of explains all the gods and goddesses and like their origin stories, because I really do find it interesting. But Kali, and the reason why they worshipped her is obviously because she has that feminine energy, creativity, fertility. But she's also the incarnation of another god, Parvati, and Shiva. And it says that Kali is said to live in cemeteries amid the decaying corpses, reminding us that our world is nothing but a cemetery, which, I mean, true.
I mean, we're all just walking on bones.
Where all things need to be born and die.
Yeah.
She wears the garland of skulls, like you said, to show us that we must cut asunder the skeletons in our closet. She gives us the implements for our own personal excisions, and she drips blood while consuming all of creation. So I love this description. And it goes on to say that she reminds us every minute is constantly destroyed in the cycle of time. She was born from the earwax of Vishnu, and who's the preserver and protector. And the two demons, Madhu and Kataba, were her brother. And I don't know if it was her brother and husband.
So, yes, like a lot of them are, I hate to say incestuous, but in the same vein as like the Greek gods, that a lot of times something can be your consort as well as your sibling in different forms. So a lot of it is like she can come from something, but then in another form, it is her consort. So, but yes, and Vishnu is like the highest of the high. That's like their top tier. And then above that is just becomes more and more abstract. And then as you go down, they become more and more of these characters. So that's why then Kali has like that serpentine tongue, and she's got the blue skin, and yeah, she's wicked.
Yes. She's kind of depicted, she's sitting in a lotus flower that comes from Vishnu's, I guess, abdomen or navel, and that's where she also gets her 18 arms from. And so she's just this scary, you know, embodiment of like destruction, and the ultimate like protector against the evil is too. So this is what the cult and all these devotees are doing, these murders in honor of her. So they think they're like doing a favor by doing this in the name of Kali. It kind of comes full circle. It's like no one asked you to do this, but this is what they did.
It's like I got my Kali candle. I love Kali. I burn a candle for her. So you could see here, she's sitting here with her blue skin and she's eating the head of a man. Yes. She loves eating men, and I love that for her. So yeah, it's great. Yeah, she's got some great energy going on. So I don't know what else he did. He's gonna probably freak me out. But I mean,
so what they did is in India, they kind of traveled up and along a river, and the river was a trading route where merchants would come from all over the world and kind of go up and down the river and then trade along the towns and villages along the river. And the British had taken over India during this time. And even though they were terrorized by them, James Patton, he would write about the thugs and robbers along this river and what they were doing while they were trying to trade with India. And so here's what they would do. Thug Baram, his cult grew to over 200 members, and the gang members would communicate with each other using Ramos, which was their own, they had like code words and made up language. They would dress up and mingle and with these like pilgrims and just other caravans full of people. And so people in the caravan would just be like, oh, this is just extra people in our group that are going to be trading up and down the river. But when night would come, they would use their Ramos, so their secret language, and they would impersonate a jackal's cry, which I don't know if you've ever heard like a fox screaming, like a baby fox yelling in the middle of the night.
It's creepy AF, yeah. They like scream.
Yeah, that's what it was. They would kind of scream or signal to other gang members who were in the jungle. And, you know, for their own tradition, they never attacked women, Muslims, Sufis, or lepers. But when they would come in through the jungle at night and attack, they would grab these people working in the caravan as they slept. And that's when Thug Baram would take the sash out and just press the medallion on a victim's neck and just suffocate them until they died. Once they died or killed everyone in that caravan or in that group is when they would just loot the bodies and move on to the next group along the river. So that's what they did over 900 times. They were only able to prove, I think it was 131.
What? Yeah. They were able, I mean, I'm a little impressed. They were able to prove that many. This was in the 1700s?
So James Patton, the guy who started writing about and bringing attention to how dangerous the trading routes were along this river in India, and that people were dressing up and disguising themselves in this convoy, it brought more attention, brought unwanted attention brought on to the thugs. And so when they did catch Baram, they confessed to seeing more than 931 murders in front of him, but the entire gang comprised over 200 people that were divided into small groups. So they have no way of knowing how many people they actually killed, because how do you know? It's not like they were taking a total.
You can't do the math. It's too much math.
You can't math. Baron's popularity, or negative popularity, even spread all the way back to England, and five different investigation teams arrived in India to not only find him, but find the group, and then find the people who were killing all of the merchants that were coming. And so they actually found Saeed first, the guy who was 25 years older than him when he was a little boy, and introduced him to this lifestyle. They found him first, and he basically surrendered right away, because the British was able to find Saeed's family and threatened his family. So I don't know. It seems like that's so weak. Like, you can go around, dress up and in disguise and kill and murder, but the second they're like, we're going to get your family, they're like, okay, fine. You got me. I won't ever do it again. I'm like, that's it? That's all it took?
I mean, you didn't hide them better? I mean, you could put yourself in all these costumes, but you didn't think to, like, put them into hiding?
Not live somewhere else? I don't know.
Change your names? I don't know. Okay.
So for his family, he confessed. And then in 1838, which was 6 years later, they finally found Thug Baram. He was arrested. And then in 1840, Baram and his family were all executed by hanging by a tree in Jablapur. So that tree where they were hung, it still exists today. It still is there, and you can visit, which I think is crazy. It's a giant, amazing, cool-looking tree. It looked like the tree from Lion King. Like, that the site where he was executed, people visit, like, a tourist spot. So from between 1790 and 1840, they think he did up to 931 murders with his handkerchief cloth. And, oh, here it is. Only 125 were actually confirmed. So I think that he just made up a number to what was actually confirmed, because there's no way if there's over 200 people in the group.
No.
And they were doing this for...
for a long time. Years.
45 years. I mean,
that was just insane. Like a random number he threw out there.
It is the random number he threw out there.
I mean, honestly, before they hung him, did he give any kind of indication that he was sorry or make any kind of plea for his life? Or was he just sort of like, nah, I did what I did. Peace out.
No, a part of his capture. So when he started murdering people in these murders, the news of the murders were getting all the way back to England. It wasn't until 1822 where they actually made a magistrate district in Pradesh, in the area where he was doing all these crimes. And they sent five different teams from England. One of which, I think it was led by, his name was Lord William Bentinck. He was appointed like the governor of that area. And so he just gave full freedom to investigators to reveal whatever information they could. However you can find these people, whatever you can do it.
Because of the money.
So I don't, basically. They got the information about Saeed's location and family first by reaching out to his house.
I'm sure the records and everything from that time, it's not easy to piece together. It's a really long time ago. I'm amazed that so much of that story is still intact, because that's a huge case. And for that far back, it's incredible. I'm sure that if somebody like him and a cult of 200 guys had decided to just go around raping women or taking children for like trafficking, we wouldn't even know his name. But because he was taking money from the British Empire, they were like, nah, this can't happen. Like, we need to stop this man. He's going to go down in history books as robbing us of our money. And yeah, he was...
what they cared about more is they're trading spices and silks and things with India. And they didn't want to have, like, a debit in their accounting books.
So many people joined him. That's a lot of people, 200. And this idea that he had all these rules, like, okay, we're going to worship this goddess, and we're not going to attack women, we're not going to attack lepers, we're not going to attack the serfs. Like, all these ideas, it seems like that's not the kind of group that you would just join if you want to be a run-of-the-mill thief. So did he, when he would take what he took from these caravans, did they just take it for themselves? And it was like every man for himself, what you stole, you kept. Was it like a Robin Hood situation? Like, we're going to take this back and give it to other poor people? Or was it just like,
no, there wasn't any evidence that it was like a Robin Hood situation, or they turned around and said, you know, what the British are doing is horrible, what they're doing in India. Like, they can't just come in here and create their own governments and tell us what to do. It wasn't anything like that. There wasn't a clear, like, vendetta or anything.
No high ideals.
No, it was like, we're going to be killing in the name of Kali, and we'll just keep it for ourselves, and this is what we're going to keep doing. And he just turned into this, I guess, monster. When he was caught and him and his family were hung, other people in his cult or group were also hung on that same tree. But after 1840, if there were any new gang members, they could get concession or, I guess, freedom if they were, they agreed to basically be sent to a reformatory, which.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. What kind of reformatory? I don't know about that.
I don't know if a reformatory was like a better life than what they may have had.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Like if it was safer in there or something like that. But they said after they, you know, get rid of basically the current gangs, if there's any followers that come after, if you admit what you're doing or what you've done, you can seek concession.
There's options. Anyway, I mean, not an automatic death sentence, which is something, I guess. Did they say if, like, they said they executed him and his family. Did he ever have, like, kids or shack up, get married, anything? No info.
There's a book by Mike Dash, and it's literally called Thug, The True Story of India's Murderous Religion.
Okay.
It doesn't have anything in there about, like, if he had tons of children or different wives along the way. There is a movie. I wasn't able to find. I really wanted to watch the film, but there's a Hindi film called Thugs of Hindustan, which kind of goes along with his life. Bairam, he did have, when he initially started doing these killings along the training routes, he was with a woman. I didn't put it in the story, but it was with a woman named Dolly, and apparently they would do some of these murders together, like they were partners in crime. But then I never heard of Dolly ever again. So I don't know if she was his wife that went home and like raised the kids, or if it was a member of the group.
So I
just left it at that because I was
No more info. I mean, I would think pretty hard to keep a relationship up when you're on the road for that long.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially if you're going to be a thuggy. Yeah. You're going to be on the road leading 200 people. It's just, that's a hard life. Mm-hmm. Not really conducive to being a family man.
No, not good.
Not in the least. No.
Now, in present day also, in addition to the tree in Jabalpur, where Thug and his gang were executed, there is also a like memorial to William Henry Seaman, who was the British soldier and group that actually were given credit for catching these guys, and Saeed as well. So it looks like
that feels kind of like weird to have a memorial to both of them in the same. That kind of feels like that feels like somebody came along and was like, "Oh, is your memorial here? I'm just gonna put my name here in the same place." Like, no.
I'll send you the picture of the little memorial. Well, it's not little to me. It doesn't look like anything. I don't know what's actually there, but it's like a historical area that you can visit and learn about Thug. But it's just like, okay, I guess. Like, you get a memorial, you get a memorial. I'm not sure.
Okay. I mean, that's not a small memorial. That's definitely a
It's substantial.
It's substantial. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's a piece.
I can send you a picture of the tree also.
Yes, I'd like to see the tree. I like trees.
It's kind of interesting that it still exists.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just find it very interesting. You know, it would be real easy. It's hard, I think. I don't think most people would argue with me that to keep any people's, never mind 200 men, on the road, traveling, keep them in line in general is very difficult. So you'd have to be a very strong and charismatic and a very good leader in general to be managing 200 people on the road, you know, be able to resolve conflicts, be able to mitigate responsibility and be able to like keep all these guys in line. And then to, on top of that, be like telling them all these rules, like you can attack this way and you can attack that way. And we're going to have the secret language and you have to learn it this way. And you have to worship this God and you have to like, so all of a sudden, and then on top of it, I mean, not for anything, because obviously these guys can have different provocations and different tastes, but for the most part in India in this time period to be like, okay, and on top of this, when we're doing these raids, you can't rape the women and you can't steal any children for slavery.
Yeah, and have those rules.
And to have those rules. And I wonder how he dealt with it if somebody broke those rules, because I have to imagine that happened more than once. I'd like to know how he dealt with them, because I guess he just took them out with a coin. Again, very James Bond. Makes me think of like you taking the top hat off and throwing it across the room to like take someone's head off, right? So it's just very oh yeah, that's a beautiful tree. You're right, very, very Lion King, very that majestic,
very dramatic, yeah.
Yes, very Jungle Book, very like beautiful, lush. I mean,
yeah, I would love to know more about the group. Like, how was it, like a gang? Like, did you have to be initiated into the group? But it was literally just like
so hard to get information from that time period. I get it. It's very hard when you do research that far. I mean, it can be hard for me to get research just from somebody who's like here in 2019. Forget about 1700s. So, I'm doing research now on a case, and it's like just now, like 2016. And I'm like, Ron, how do I get these files from this courthouse? I'm like, I can't even find these people's names. So I get it. It can be very hard to find those details. But it's fascinating. I wonder why they call him the Ted Bundy. He didn't eat women. He wasn't out raping co-eds. What the fuck?
None of that happened. He never was on a college campus. He never escaped from the British.
Once he wasn't carrying a canoe. No buggy. I mean, thuggy buggy. I don't know. I'm trying to find a link. I can't. I mean,
find a link too. I don't know if they're comparing the amount of
kids. I was gonna say, but if they're doing that, then they're doing him a real disservice, because Ted Bundy has nothing on him. Also, he had a real following. I mean, if anything, I think he's more like a Charles Manson, a Jim Jones, like a real cult leader. I mean,
a cult leader,
but also a cult leader who didn't mind getting his hands dirty, a real like assassin, real assassin. He had some skills. I mean, even if you took down the lore a little bit, right? Even if you're saying like, okay, fine, he wasn't whipping his belt off, but even if you assume he did even a tenth of the murders and that he didn't do them with that kind of, you know, pizzazz, I mean, still.
Over that span of time, since he was 10 years old, when he started just scaring people.
Yeah.
And learning the ways from Saeed. I think Saeed was the one who was like, here's where you can find Thug. Just leave, don't leave me out of this.
Yeah. And
I think that's kind of what happened, because he taught him everything he knew. And I think that's kind of how he got started. But he was like a little boy who was 10. And just joined up. I don't know if it was safer to be in a gang rather than like on your own in the village in that time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Possible.
I mean,
you kind of have to refer a lot with things like stories like this from history.
Sure. Look, you could paint this in a real pretty, like, you know, You could make it like a Disney movie. You could make it into this Robin Hood story. You could take it the other way and be like, look, this is just a kid who saw his options. He saw the fact that he could be working a dirt farm. And instead, he saw an opportunity to climb his way up, make money, be a leader, have the power. And he took it. And that's the way he wanted to be. And it wasn't about giving back. And it wasn't about... But it still is an incredibly fascinating story for what it was. Because to go from 10 years old and being a nothing kid on the streets to having a following of 200 people, that's incredible. Because even if you just took the
trade routes...
Terrorizing the British Empire... Because even if you just took the facts of the story, which is they hung a man who terrorized their trade route for decades, even if he never killed a single person with his belt, he's still responsible for terrorist activity that spanned decades. So even if all he did was convince other people to kill for him, he's still leagues ahead of Charles Manson.
It's true.
Say what you want.
It's true.
People call Charles Manson a serial killer all the time. So if you're going to put him in that category, let's give it to Thug.
Exactly.
So good story. I mean, really very, very interesting.
Never heard of him.
Me neither.
A group of people killed thousands of people on the British trade routes in India. Because I remember learning about that. Never learned about them all being murdered every day.
Absolutely. And hey, let's just keep shitting on the British Empire. Last week, stealing bananas from Colombians. This week, stealing all the money from the Indians. Let's just, you know what? Fuck you, Corner. Okay. All the way. So, all across the globe. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Listen, the king over there wants to make a difference. Let's see it now.
Yeah, we're still doing in Jamaica.
Oh my god, very good, very good. Nice. I never heard of it either. Very. I love hearing all this stuff. You know, I've always been very fascinated in how the British infiltrated and really just their oppression of India. It's just always been very sad and also fascinating, that history, to me. So, I mean, hearing stuff like this, especially with a true crime twist on it, is snaps. I love it. Excellent.
I love hearing stories that I've never heard before, which is kind of difficult to do because you kind of get into the same, like, merry-go-round with, like, when you're like, who's the worst serial killer? And they're like, Ted Bundy. And you're like, no, it's not.
I was in the car with Morgan. And, you know, she's very open with me. So she told me, she said, you know, Mom, some of the kids at school have been talking about Dahmer on Netflix. And, you know, is it really scary? Is it something that, you know... Do you think that is too scary for me? And I said, you know what, Morgan? I'm going to be honest with you. There are elements of that story that I think are disturbing. So we have to be careful not to become desensitized to violence, because it's very easy, especially somebody like myself that I deal with a lot of true crime in my research. It would be very easy for me to be like, oh, somebody else eating bodies, like, who cares? I didn't say that to her. I didn't say that sentence, but I said, it's very easy to become desensitized to violence. I said, however, there's a lot of horror movies and a lot of things out there that are really scary and really bad. And so I'm glad that you came and you talked to me about it. I said, you know, that's based on somebody who did do terrible things to people. However, I don't personally think that what he did is the worst that you're going to hear about. And I think that there are much, much scarier things out there. So he did kill a lot of people. And mm-hmm. he did eat parts of them after he killed them. And he did do things that are very disrespectful with their body parts after they were dead. So if those are things that you hear the kids talking about, then those are all things that are true. And those are things that did happen. They didn't just happen in the show.
Yeah.
I said, but, you know, I've watched a few of the episodes. And so far, I haven't seen things that I feel are that bad. That wasn't part of the conversation I had with her. But like, as I'm telling her this, that's like running through my head. Like, I've already watched like a few episodes and I'm thinking like, I've seen really awful horror movies and like, I've seen things like Saw and shit where like people are getting tortured alive. Like people are getting raped and tortured. Like, there's limits. There's limits. But
the thing that is scary about the Dahmer, I mean, the whole thing, it is good. I watched it. Loved it. It was wonderful.
Didn't finish it yet. I didn't.
The thing with, they kind of like sexualize Dahmer a little bit and make it more of a movie, like you kind of want to feel bad for Dahmer. And the facts of the matter are, Dahmer's like the loneliest person. I don't think it necessarily was all of his fault how lonely he is, but they make you feel bad for a serial killer who took members of a community who were really not paid attention to, like African-American, LGBTQ+ community.
So yes.
That part isn't okay.
Correct.
And that could be scary to people. It should yes. be scary that he tried to turn a 14-year-old into a zombie.
Yes. Like, oh, absolutely. Horrifying.
So, but like the Netflix show, I thought it was great.
I mean, but, horrifying. I think that, you know, you always have to look at these things and understand, you know, mm-hmm. Netflix, HBO, they're trying to make money. They're always going to make things like when they use Zac Efron, you know, they're always going to make these things to a certain degree sexy. Even if they're not sexualizing it, they're going to make these things appealing to us at some level, because if they didn't, we wouldn't watch them. And the other element is that at a certain point, I'd rather sit with you and talk through that part of, yes. Yes, I'd rather talk to you about the fact that it wasn't okay. And absolutely, to your point, people like Dahmer, different than Ted Bundy, targeted people who were a vulnerable community. And most serial killers do. The sex workers, the LGBTQ+ community, the minorities. Yeah. Like, that is something definitely that I would want to bring up. The victims that are not the pretty white girl. And so, like, that's something I would definitely want to bring up, that, you know what? It's not looked into enough when somebody says, hey, something's wrong. But when they're not pretty and white and blonde, nobody listens. But yes, it's always that when we see something on TV, it's going to look nice. But yeah. Is it scarier than when you watch Scream and somebody's getting stabbed over and over and the blood's flying all over the walls? Not really. I'm like when I was talking to her about it, she's like, oh, so he just ate people? And I'm like, I'm like, first of all, you're so my daughter. I'm like, it is scary. And that is really bad that, like, that's not something we should brush off. Like, eating people's bad. But also, yes, I'm on your level that you're right. Things like this with the thuggies doing what they did is not the worst things. Like, we shouldn't be comparing that to, like, oh, he's the Ted Bundy of India. Like, no, like, that's really not the worst thing. Keeping a girl in a box under your bed for years is worse. Keeping, you know, little kids chained up and then selling them on the black market is worse. Harvesting people's organs is worse. Like, there's so many more levels of deprivation that, like, I understood what she was getting at, but, like, you're right. Like, cannibalism after they're dead isn't the worst. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, I hear you, and also, like, I hear you.
People just want to know, is it going to make me jump scare, like watching Hostel or some shit?
No.
Which, I mean, it's not like that.
Like, right. And especially, like, the first episode, like, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, you know what? Like, at no point do you see him, like, ripping out intestines. Like, the most you ever hear is the cops talking about, oh, genitalia in bags and blah, blah, blah. Like, you see the head at the end in the freezer. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, based on what, like, if they've already been watching things like Chucky and Halloween and like Freddy Krueger, like, they've all been grown, like, they've all been watching this shit. Like, they all, like, that they've all been watching this shit in horror movies. And, like, you're right, it's different that they need to know that, like, that is a real person who did those things. And I did, like, impress that upon her. But also, like, I'd rather you not watch that behind my back, because I'm not dumb and I know you have YouTube. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And yes, I have parental controls, but also I know that you could be at school and watching that on someone else's phone who doesn't have those controls. So it's like, it's a fine line. It's a fine line.
It is so... It's such a weird, I don't know if it's comparison the right way to say it, but, like, you mentioned, like, watching the movies when there's, like, blood and gore and stuff like that. Like, yeah, that's scary. It makes me jump. I might close my eyes or whatever. I don't want to see blood flying at my face. But it's scarier that, like, that was, what Dahmer did was real. Or, like, what other people
said, yes,
to them, what didn't actually happen. Like, shouldn't that be scarier?
Right? And I had to explain that to her, because she was like, well, so if it's not that bloody, like, why can't I watch it? And I said, well, because sometimes the concept of something is scarier than what you're actually seeing. And so the fact that you're actually watching a recreation of what somebody did is more horrifying than the fact that what you're seeing isn't real. Like, the fact that those are just actors is actually, like, it's, but you're still understanding in your head that that was a real person and a real crime and that those were real victims and that, like, that person almost didn't get away. So, like, that was really scary, is that it was only by a little bit of luck and a little bit of intelligence, and that he was smart enough, like, that he was able to get away. He almost didn't. So it's like that concept, you have to understand sometimes those concepts are a little too deep. So you have to, like, you have to understand, like, sometimes we're going to make a call that concept is a little more scary than the actual blood and gore of it. But I also understood where she was coming from, that, like, you're right, like, cannibalism is not the scariest thing out there. Ted Bundy is not the scariest one out there. Like, people who are like, Ted Bundy, Dahmer, I'm like, no, sit down. Sit down.
They just, no! People wanted to see their face. That's all that happened.
Like, God, stop it. They were not the scariest. Stop. Talk to me about the Green River Killer. He was a fucking prick. Talk to me about the Toy Box Killers.
Being a little is scary.
Yeah, him. But even him, I think he's a fucking liar. I don't know. To go on a rabbit hole dig for him on Reddit, I think he's a liar. But he's still scary. Israel Keyes, scary.
That's scary.
He's scary because he looked normal. Scary. Hillside Stranglers, scary. There's a lot mm-hmm. people worse than the ones that are, like, famous. Like, yeah, okay. BTK, John Wayne Gacy. Yeah, they're scary, but there's worse. There's worse.
That's what's messed up.
The most famous ones are not the scariest ones, guys. Mm-hmm. They're not. And sometimes the ones who let their victims live are the worst. Those are the worst. You watched Room? Room scared the shit out of me. I could barely finish that book.
she had a
son?
A son with him? Yeah.
Yeah.
That is scary.
That they didn't even die, and I couldn't. Mm-mm. I almost couldn't finish that book.
That's the thing that freaks me out. That's what I think of. This is how messed up I am. If I'm alone at night in a parking lot, I am like, I need to get to my car and lock the doors and not check my phone because someone's going to put me in their shed. And I'm gonna have to have a baby with them. Like
that's absolutely
where my mind goes. Not like get in the car, it's raining, or you need to. No, I don't think about that. I'm like, oh, that guy was kind of flirty with me in the elevator. I better see what car he got into first.
Mm-hmm.
Before I get to my
It's these okay. little things and that nobody thinks of. When we were walking back to our car this morning, mind you, it's 10 o'clock. And we're walking through a parking garage, but it's daylight. And as we're walking, I'm behind Ron. Morgan's behind me. We're walking, and Ron decides to cut between the cars. Now, my instinct, where our car was parked, I could have just taken an extra little step and gone around the corner of the cars. And as we walked through, I just said out loud, I said, instinctively, I felt like I should have walked around all these cars. And Ron said, why would you have done that? I said, because as a woman, these cars that you just walked through very nonchalantly, these are all very big trucks and somebody could be hiding underneath these cars and I'm just walking through them.
What if it was a van and they just slide the door open?
Or how about somebody's hiding under, like, I don't know, like all these little things subconsciously are all in my head running at 1,000 miles per hour, and you can call me paranoid. You can call me whatever you want, but I haven't been kidnapped yet. So I'm going to put that on my side of score, Natalia, kidnapper zero. So
the whole thing I told you about with the guy in the elevator. So there really was a guy like kind of flirting with me in the elevator. And so when I walked out, to the front where everyone was like getting into their cars or whatever, I was just like, I'm gonna wait here and like pretend I'm on my phone for a second to see what car he goes into, because we from the elevator through the lobby, like we kept going in the same direction. And so I stopped and I was like, I can see my car, like I can get to my car right here, but he's also walking in that same direction. So I was just like, I'm gonna stop here and hang out with these like four other randos, play on my phone for a second, and then go. Because I'm like, nothing bad happens under a light, right? Which is
you hope not. You hope but not.
I was just like, yeah, those are, is it because we were women and we have to think about these things? Or is it because we watch too much TV?
I mean, I've taught both my kids equally to do things like that. Like, you should always be aware of your surroundings, look behind you, don't put yourself in dark corners. And I've taught that equally to both of them, but I'm sure that a lot of it is us being women and that subconscious thing. I mean, I hate to think that it's that way, but it is a reality, because I cannot imagine that Ron, as over 6 feet tall as a man, is walking around with that kind of brain. I'm sorry, not sorry. That's just not your brain. I knew that he walked ahead of me and he walked straight between a really tall van and a really tall truck, and it was all shadow, and it was not a thought in his mind that he would get kidnapped, whereas I immediately registered as, that's not safe. I just was like, my brain looked at that and was like, oh no. No, I don't like this. So
I'd be like, hold my hand.
Yeah, so it is what it is. Always check your surroundings, guys, and if somebody's flirting with you in an elevator, just take a minute, play a game on your phone or pretend to.
that's exactly what I did, because I was like, all right. The whole thing, it was just so stupid. I don't know, maybe like COVID has ruined me and I'm not around people that often. But I was like, I know what I look like right now. Like, come on. I had my hair in a messy bun. I was wearing like
nothing. There was other people around who looked way better than I did, but I literally just wanted to like go to my car. I wasn't going to go to the bar or anything.
Sometimes, so, sometimes that's they, like, that's what they're into. You never know. They want the low maintenance.
It's like, it always happens to me when I'm like doing the least amount of effort.
Right?
I do my hair and makeup and stuff. I just am like,
I have a theory. Okay, no.
Yeah.
Here, listen, hear me out. I went to meet Ron for lunch the other day, right? And when I go to meet him for lunch, I'm going to doll myself up, right? Put on the extra lip gloss, do my hair. And I was there, and I go to meet him in front of the restaurant. And when he walks up, he's like, oh, you look so cute. He's like, did any guys hit on you? And I'm like, not a one. And he's like, really? And he's like, but why not? And I'm like, well, my feeling is that when I'm looking this cute, that guys are intimidated. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm a confident woman. And I think that if, especially if I'm looking down at my phone or I'm giving off a vibe of I'm waiting for somebody and I don't want you to approach me, then you're not going to approach me if I'm, especially if I'm dolled up. But I'll tell you, if I'm running to the supermarket in sweatpants and no makeup and a messy bun, people think they can shoot their shot. Swear to God. People just think, you know what? Why not? Why not? It is my personal theory. When they see that you are just not trying, they think now's the time. Now's the time because now she's on my level. Or now she's got her guard down. So it is that time when I'm always looking my scrubbiest. That's when they come at me. Either because I'm distracted and they figure if she's distracted, now's my time. Now's my chance. or she's not looking dolled up. She's not looking like the princess. So she's not looking like she's got that bitchy aura, which, by the way, not my fault that I've got resting bitch face. That's just my face, okay?
I tend to look bored or irritated all the time. Like, I don't want
100%.
To come up and talk to me anyways.
I mean, so not for anything, but he's asking me, oh, did anybody come up and hit on you? And I'm thinking, well, I'm not giving off a vibe that would tell anybody that I want them to come up and talk to me.
Yeah, I'm not talking to anyone else, so, you know.
Like, I'm literally giving off a vibe of do not come up and engage me. Most of the time, male, female, anybody, I don't want you to talk to me for any reason. Do not talk to me at all. I'm staring at my phone or my book for a reason. Leave me the fuck alone. Stop. Stop. And then I wonder why I'm lonely. But it doesn't matter. That's... This is why I can only make friends on the internet with people like you. Because I just, in real life, I'm like this. I'm just like, what? Like, what? What do you want? Like, no. And then I feel like an asshole because then somebody's like, well, I just wanted to tell you have like gum on your face. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm sorry. Because they're just trying to be nice or telling me that like I need something. But that's a whole nother story. But yeah. That's why they're coming up to flirt with your messy bun, because you're looking approachable.
Yeah. I don't know. Who knows?
It inspires.
Because I'm kind of in the same vibe. I'm literally wearing a t-shirt and like skinny jeans. I'll throw my hair up after this and I'll go to Starbucks or something.
I mean, look, I put on, it's very minimal, the effort. I knew I wasn't taking any pictures. So, I mean, like, I threw on, like, the baggy gray hoodie, jeans. I mean, I didn't do anything special. So, I definitely was not giving off any fancy vibes. So, it's real cash. It's real cash nowadays. I am very minimal effort all the way. COVID changed us.
It really did. I have been going through my closet a little bit, and because I have all my sweaters and stuff, because it's finally feeling like fall here.
Yeah,
it was like there's a section of my closet that I have touched, but I refuse to get rid of them because they're like good pieces. And I'm just like, I haven't worn this in like 2 years. But why am I hanging into it?
I did the same thing when I was taking out the winter clothes the other day out of the bins and putting away the summer stuff. I took out a bunch of things that I was like, why am I holding on to this? Because, like, for some reason, every time I open my drawer, I dodge it. It's like a piece that's either like slightly uncomfortable, or like when I put it on, I always have to pin it, or like I love it. And I shouldn't say I love it. Like, I like it, but like, it's not like the right color. I can only wear it with like that one pair of pants. Like, it doesn't match everything. And I'm like, I should not have anything in my closet or my drawers that I dodge, or that like I avoid, or that I only wear once the whole fucking summer. Like, if I'm not like, I have the one t-shirt that I wear every week. Like, why? I've worn this already. I took this out of the bin. I've worn this like 5 times in 2 weeks. Like if I don't have like the pieces I'm going to wear all the time, like I took them, I threw them in the garbage bag. I'm like, I'm done. I'm done with that. I'm too old for that shit. I'm like, I get it. Some of the stuff I was like, I'd worn it once or twice. And I'm like, I spent a lot of fucking money. It was really cute. I had high hopes.
It's going to be too big very soon. But I also was like, what if I go back to my like important office job where I need to dress up every day?
Yep.
If I ever go back to that, I'm going to buy new clothes now.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, what if I ever want this again? Or what if I, same thing, like, oh, no. Let's all channel the thug energy, the Kali energy. Let us get rid of what we don't need. Right? The skull necklace. Let's channel that skull energy and get rid of the things in our closet. Let's get rid of the things in our closet that we don't need, guys. Let's just purge. Purge the things we don't need and make room for the things we do. And on that nice purging note, we will say goodbye until next time.
Until next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.